Hello and welcome to No Rest for the Weekend. I'm Jason Godby, and a little later on the program today, I'll be speaking with the directors of the new documentary, Lost Angel, The Genius of Judy Sill. But first, we're going to take you to the red carpet of the 44th Annual Muse Awards, right after this quick word from our sponsors.
Sponsored by Black Magic Design, the world's highest quality products for the feature film, post and broadcast industries. BlackMagicDesign.com.
Western Digital and SanDisk, the global leader in memory cards and SSDs. WesternDigital.com.
And by JMR Rentals, professional, digital, cinema and broadcast equipment rentals in Brooklyn, New York. JMRNY.com.
In March, our friends at NYWIF, New York Women in Film and Television, hosted the 44th Annual Muse Awards at Cipriani at 44th Street in Manhattan. Honorees included producer slash editor-in-chief of PBS Frontline, Rainey Aronson-Rath, actor-writer-producer Alex Borstein of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel fame, actor slash activist Tantu Cardinal, actor and president of SAG-AFTRA Fran Drescher, the head of Global Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Accessibility at Amazon, MGM, Prime Video, and Freevee, Latasha Gillespie, actor-filmmaker Kira Sedgwick, actor Millicent Simmons, and filmmaker-slash-artist-slash-author Michelle Stevenson. We were there on the red carpet, where we caught up with the guests and honorees. I'm here with Tantu Cardinal. Tantu, how does it feel to be here and honored today?
And it feels pretty special. It's kind of exciting and feels like a very honorable place to be.
What do you think the significance of these types of awards are, and what does this mean to you personally?
To me personally, it means that my work and my walk is being recognized and appreciated. And you never know, you know, in the world of film and stage, you can get it right from the audience, and you go to communities, you go different places, you can get a sense of an appreciation. So something like this is an opportunity to kind of say, yeah, yeah.
Of course, you were recently in Killers of the Flower Moon, big hit movie. You were on Echo as well. What else can we expect to see for you coming up this year?
I'm going to be going to Nantucket, working with a filmmaker that I worked with back in the day. I did a movie with Rip Torn called Where the Rivers Flow North. And this time it's an adaptation of a George Bernard Shaw play, Major Barbara. And so it's an opportunity to work with a friend, filmmaker, and to explore a different character. We haven't been off and running for a while now, so it's great.
Well, congratulations on everything. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I'm here with Rainey Aronson-Rath. How does it feel to be here today?
Oh, it's amazing. First of all, I love this group of women who really take all of us from different disciplines in film together. And so for me, it's just an amazing honor at this stage of my career to be thought of as a leader in this way. It's just really great and humbling.
With the sort of TikTokification of media, where does something like your program stand, and what do you see in the future?
I'm really committed to nonpartisan media and journalism. And so Frontline is really journalism meets documentary. So our process is about being fair and vetted. And I think there's got to be more of that in the world. I'm a big advocate for that kind of work.
Do you feel like you're kind of furthering the cause of journalism in documentary? And are long-form docs like you, is that kind of the new in-depth journalism?
I think younger people love documentaries. We found more and more young people coming to our program in our films. And so my hope is that long-form documentaries that give nuance, that have texture and context and are really authentic, will bring in new generations. So my hope is that journalism meets documentary, and that's the future.
I kind of can't believe I'm being recognized as a person of New York. It's always kind of been a dream. People always assumed I was from here my whole life. So it feels like it makes sense in some alternate universe, but you know, I relocated here in 2016 to start working on Maisel, and it kind of had that feeling of like, ah, this is home. It's like returning to a planet that I didn't know I had left as a fetus. So it feels good. It feels good to be here.
What's next for you?
I mean, for the most part, I'm right now trying to spend a lot of time with my kids. Maisel was a 6-year project, and I was away from my kids for a lot of it. And it's a big deal. I've got an 11-year-old and a 15-year-old, and I'm now just making a concerted effort to be extremely present, much to their dismay. I'm sure they're like, please go back to work. But I'm also writing and pitching, and I've got a new animated show and a feature film that I've written and gonna move forward to start soon. But
do you want to give us a scoop right now and tell us about it? Where is it at studio-wise or anything like that?
I will not give you the scoop. Nice try, though. But it's a small film, and it's something that I wrote and will be directing and in as well.
How does this feel, and what does it mean to you to be here?
You know, anything with a woman in the title, you know, an award from a group of women is inspiring. I've been doing this a really long time. I've been in this business. I've dedicated, you know, over 40 years to it. And I think that it's just a vote of confidence, like just keep going. You know, I mean, I'm going to keep going anyway, but it's like keep going with a little, you know, cherry on top.
You've been behind the camera a lot lately. Do you feel like in terms of women in the industry that there's been progress made there?
I think it's progress. I think we have a lot further to go with women's rights in general, with women's opportunities in general. But I certainly think that there's a lot more directors that are women than when I was coming up in the business. Having said that, you know, what I find to be so hard is that if you do something that doesn't do well as a director and you're a man, you often get a second, third, and fourth chance. For women, that's harder. And you end up in director's jail faster. And so, you know, men tend to fail up. And then they wonder why women are risk averse. So I think there's a lot more to do. We can all do our part, and that's part of what today's about.
For you, next upcoming projects and so forth, do you see yourself behind the camera, in front of the camera, both maybe?
Well, I'm on stage starting April 23rd in an off-Broadway play for the new group called All of Me. It's a romantic comedy. So I'll be treading the boards, as they say. As far as directing, I did an episode of Girls on the Bus as a director. And, you know, producing, directing, looking for my next thing as a director, and I'm available.
I'm here with Linda Powell, who's accepting the award for Fran Drescher. She is the Executive Vice President for SAG. Linda, great to have you here. How does it feel to be here in this mosh pit right now?
It's amazing. I mean, there are about 1,000 gorgeous women in this mosh pit right now. Fierce, beautiful, talented. I'm just excited about the event and being part of it.
For SAG right now and organized labor around the world, you guys went through a strike last year, very famously. Hollywood has sort of been in a downturn since that. Some people are blaming the strike for that sort of thing. Have you guys made progress since the deal was signed, and where do you see things moving forward?
Well, first I would say anyone who's blaming the strike for the slowdown hasn't been paying attention to the industry over the past 5-10 years. It's been heading this way. There was overproduction in an attempt to create a business model that wasn't working. They just threw a lot of money at the situation. So there was bound to be, and I think it was planned even before the strikes. There's a reset going on, and where we end up after that is both a challenge and an opportunity. And what I'm really excited about is the unity we have amongst all of the entertainment labor unions right now, to make sure that our voices are a part of this reset, to make sure that as the brave new world gets created, we have a say in what that looks like. We got 14 pages of never before seen AI language into our TV theatrical contract. Each negotiation that we've been doing since then, we've been building on that, we've been refining that, we've been making it specific to the contracts that are in front of us, and I'm excited. We've got so much energy amongst our membership right now that it's a real exciting time to be here.
Do you feel like there has been progress for women
in acting and in the industry? And or is it one step forward, two steps back, like it can sometimes be? How do you see it now in terms of progress, and where would you like it to go?
I think women in labor have made great strides. Our top officers are all women. We're an all-women team at our top. You look at WGA, you look at IATSE, you look at the other unions, our sister unions. There's a lot of sisters in our sister unions. So I think that bodes well for our representation. I think in terms of the media landscape and the stories that are getting told, there's still work to be done. I think that is an American problem, and we're trying to be part of that solution.
So, and you're accepting here for Fran tonight. What would Fran say if she were here?
Fran would say that we kicked ass, and that we're fierce, and the secret sauce is patience and time, listening to all voices. She's disappointed she couldn't be here to accept the award. She's very honored. Her father passed away, and she needed to be with her mother. I'm really excited to accept the award on her behalf because she deserves it so much.
So, first of all, how does it feel to be here?
New York Women in Film and Television, I mean, I'm honored to be here. They honored Fresh Kills with achievement in directing at the New Hamptons Film Festival, so I will love them forever.
So, I've heard the movie is going to come out. Are we doing theatrical release? And tell me all about it.
Yeah, Fresh Kills will be out June 14th. It's coming out first, I believe, New York and L.A., going wider after that. And hopefully then, yeah, streaming. And but it was really important to me to get it out in the theaters.
And Jennifer Esposito, what is your... I know you just finished a big project, but what is your next one? More directing?
Yeah, that's my... it really was something I've always wanted to do and make my own films. And so I've signed on to direct something else. I can't talk about it yet, but also working on some other things that I'm writing that really mean something to me. So, yeah.
Do you think this is a trend with more, sort of more stars turning behind the camera, being the masters of their own destiny kind of thing?
Honestly, it's time. It's really time. I'm sorry I waited so long, to be honest. The work, especially as a female and as you get older, you have to do it for yourself because there's like an expiration date on women. And it's like, I didn't agree to that. And I'm not going to agree to that. And I have a lot more to say. And I think that's part of the reason why they like to make us sit down at that point. Because it's at a point where you're like, wow, I see it all now, and it doesn't work for me. And I'm not afraid to go my own road. So I'm glad people are starting to do that. Actors are starting to create their own work.
It used to be that, like, if a woman made a film and it didn't do well, then, like, women directors were out. Like a woman couldn't get a film. Do you think that's still happening? Do you see progress? Do you feel like there's progress?
Nope. No. I would like to say yes, but I can't. And I've been on the other side now for 6 years with my film. And I'm sad to say there isn't progress. There just isn't. There just isn't.
What do you want to see happen in the future?
I want to see more women in charge of really picking the films that get distributed, buying the films that get distributed, green lighting the films that get distributed. That's where we need the change. It's not in all the other positions. It's the ones in charge, because that's when maybe a difference will happen. But we also, and I was just at a screening, small screening for my film last night, I say this to every audience. We need the audience to show up for independent films. Like, we need it. We desperately need it. And it's not, like I said last night, it's not only about my film. It's about what you're seeing and representation of who you are, who your family is, who you're in your society, your community. It's so important and vital because the people that are picking films is from one limited perspective. And that just doesn't represent us all. So it's so important for the public to go and support independent films.
Now with Hollywood sort of scrambling and the big studios taking a pause to figure out what they want to put out, people are not going to the movies like they used to. Do you think that's because of a lack of originality? And do you think because that's happening, there's an opportunity now for people like you?
Yes, absolutely. I think, I don't remember. I mean, the one thing that I saw recently that I was like blown away was Anatomy of a Fall, and that's not from this country. That says a lot, and it makes me so sad because we've got brilliant talent here. And it's become an algorithm, and who makes money, and it's art is not about that. And you can have both. But I do think it's an opportunity for independent filmmakers, but we need the audience help.
To learn more about NYWIFT and the Muse Awards, visit nywift.org/muse. And joining me now via Zoom, they are the directors of the new documentary, Lost Angel, The Genius of Judy Sill, Mr. Andy Brown and Mr. Brian Lindstrom. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to have you. I saw the documentary. Well done. Very well done. I enjoyed it immensely.
Thank you.
Didn't look like the easiest documentary to make, and I want to kind of get into that. But first, I want to give people a little bit of background. So can you tell us who was Judy Sill and why haven't we heard of her?
Well, Judy was the first artist signed to Asylum Records, which was David Geffen's label. She made two albums for Asylum and a posthumous album that she recorded with her friends in the mid-70s. She died of an OD in 79. Her records were out of print for many, many years. Were reissued in the early 2000s, so she started gaining a newer audience. She's arguably more well-known now than she was in her lifetime. There was no obituary that appeared when she died in L.A. in her hometown, so she was pretty much lost in obscurity. We did not, we're not responsible for people knowing who Judy Sill is. We hope we increase that and make people aware of her, but she has a nice audience, a cult following, let's say now. But a lot of the work that was done in terms of how we went to make the film was in a booklet that was accompanied the posthumous release called Dreams Come True that had interviews with many of her friends and colleagues. And we used that as our blueprint of when we started, of who we were going to interview. And that's how we began. 10 years ago, at least.
How many years ago?
It took 10 years to make the film. So in December 2013, we started interviews.
Wow. What was it about her in particular that struck you as being special?
Well, I think what really drew me was just the power of her music and then the kind of unexpected life story. And at first glance, it seems like completely opposite. How could that person contain both those things? And yet the more we delved into it and the more we found out about Judy, it made perfect sense. As she says in the film, she was doing those holdups as a teenager just to try to feel something, And, the childhood abuse that she suffered at the hands of her stepfather just had profound impacts on her life. And her kind of heroic struggle to make sense of that and to share her music, her healing music with the world, was just something we really wanted to tell.
And to do it in her own voice, if we could, as much as possible. That was the puzzle we tried to solve from the beginning. And that's partly why it took so long, because we had to get all the archival material that was out there, which was not much, but included an audio cassette of an interview she gave in 72, where she told her whole life story. And then we got possession of her journals and drawings that sort of covered 73 to 79 up to when she died. And we were able to create a voiceover out of that a voiceover actress does. And so that was Judy's voice telling the story. And the drawings served as the template aesthetically for the animation. And the score is almost exclusively the multi-tracks from Heart Food, her second album. So she's scoring the film as well. So that took a while to accumulate all that stuff so that we could have Judy tell her own story. And we got lucky, too, in terms of finding the right material to do it.
There's an incredible amount of archival, and you have some interviews as well of people who are no longer alive. The fact that you're starting out with a subject who isn't around to tell her story, is incredibly challenging. And I really like the way you guys dealt with that. And I kept thinking, just from a filmmaker's perspective, like, God, this must have taken forever to make. This must have been like, what was the initial reaction when you started approaching? Because you got some, you know, like big names. Like, you guys sit down with David Geffen. I'm sure he's not the easiest guy to get on the phone. What were the initial reactions when you said, hey, we want to make a doc about Judy Sill?
Gratitude.
Yeah, gratitude and support. Like, that's a great idea. How can we help?
Pretty much everyone. And you're right about when we first started, our goal was to get as many of the people of Judy's circle interview, because they're older. And so we have an in memoriam section in the film, because we started the film so long ago and people have passed who we've interviewed who are in the film. There's a bunch of people. So we needed to get that, you know, group filmed as quickly as possible. And fortunately we did.
Was there any one bit that was particularly challenging, or any one person that was particularly challenging to get or to open up about this? Because everybody from her generation seems pretty open about her. They seem incredibly frank, because it seems like that's the way she was, you know, mm-hmm. like very much in that spirit. But was there anybody that was like, oh, we're never going to get this guy, and then you actually got the guy?
I guess Geffen, right, in a way? Tell this story. Yeah, tell this story, Brian.
We knew we really wanted to interview David Geffen, of course, because he was the first person to sign Judy. You know, he must have seen that talent.
Plus, he was blamed for the destruction of her career in Wikipedia. So.
And we were lucky enough to interview Jackson Brown, and Jackson took it upon himself to basically recruit David Geffen for the film. And so we got an interview with David, and it was transformative. And what was so powerful is that after the interview, David kind of gently touched me on the arm and said, please get my relationship with Judy right, because she meant the world to me.
Of course, you have a lot of these great musicians talking about her, like J.D. Souther, and you guys got Linda Ronstadt too. Was that also archival? Because she doesn't do interviews. She doesn't do appearances at all.
Right. We did that one via the phone, and it was such a treat to talk to her for an hour. And her generosity and love for Judy, you know, was just really inspiring.
Yeah, and we were lucky that we did it at a time right before she stopped giving interviews. So, but she was wonderful, and she's just so smart. And it's a shame that you know, she isn't able, I guess, to speak, because she just has so many, her mind is so sharp. It has nothing to do with her mind. So, but yeah, we're lucky. We were very lucky to get her.
One of my favorite parts of the film is when Linda says, you know, if Judy were alive today, I hope we'd be friends. I always really
yeah, I did love that too.
You guys are about to release the film. It's coming out soon, but have you had a chance to see it with an audience yet? And what was the reaction that you got?
We have. We saw it at Doc NYC in 2022 in November. And it was just so gratifying to basically have that wonderful physical sensation in an auditorium of the audience responding to Judy.
It was surreal. I had never seen it projected until that moment either. So that was just fabulous, you know, just to see it on a big screen and a nice system and sounded great. Yeah, it was, I'll never forget that. And we were fortunate. People responded well to it. And we actually, I'll just toot our own horn a little here, but we won a festival in England called Doc and Roll. And Judy was huge. I mean, not huge, but I wasn't surprised that we won, because I knew how popular she was and how rabid her small fan base of England was. And so, you know, that was terrific. I was so, we were just so grateful, you know, to that it went off. Just that we, that a sense that the Judy fans liked the movie, I think in some ways was the most gratifying. Has been the most gratifying part of this.
What was the impact that you felt it had on the audience? What impact do you want it to have on audiences, on for people who knew her, and probably more so for the people who, like me, who had not heard of her before this?
Well, I think it brings a lot of new people to Judy's music, and also obviously to her life. And I think the people that already know Judy probably have a deeper appreciation of the challenges she faced. And also of the the incredible fortitude that she had and how she never stopped writing music. You know, 3 days before her death, she was writing a new song.
Yeah, and this idea of perseverance through suffering, despite the fact that she herself did not make it. She had a disease of addiction, and that was proven more powerful, but she never gave up. She was writing songs to the very end. She did not want to die. She did not commit suicide, I believe. The idea of dying as an OD terrified her. So, you know, but like Brian said, you know, it's just she didn't have the tools at her disposal that people would have now, let's say, you know, in recovery. She did go to rehab a couple times, but it just was not the same support system, sadly.
It's a very, I think it's a very impactful movie, and I think you guys, I think it's told with a lot of love, too. Like, you can see that from the people you interview and from the way people talk about her and the way it's depicted. The animation's beautiful. Like, you guys made a really beautiful movie. For people who want to know more about you, know about the film, where they can find it, et cetera, where can they find you guys?
At Judy Sill Doc is the Instagram. That's always updated, and we're on Facebook. What's our Facebook?
Lost Angel, The Genius of Judy Sill, and on Twitter at Judy Sill Doc.
We've got the movie premiering as well. It's going to be out in theaters.
Yes, it'll be in New York and LA and San Francisco. And New York and LA is playing at next, starting on the 12th. There's some other theaters as well, but it starts streaming on Apple and Amazon that day as well.
And that's all we got for you today. Thanks so much for taking this trip down the rabbit hole. For more of our content, including our movie reviews, visit our website, norestfortheweekendpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app or on YouTube, youtube.com/getbehindtherabbit. I'd like to thank my guests, Andy Brown and Brian Lindstrom, along with everyone who came out to chat with us at the Muse Awards, and our sponsors, Black Magic Design, Western Digital, and JMR Rentals. For Behind the Rabbit Productions, I'm Jason Godby. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.